Ladies and gentlemen, this podcast, truly one of the most unusual ever recorded, contains dribble, slang, and frank discussion of subject matter which under no circumstances should be heard by small children, persons with a heart condition, or anyone who is upset easily. If you are such a person, or if you're the parent of a very small child in the room, we urge you to switch off your streaming device now.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
I am just dandy. How are you?
Oh, I'm fantabulous.
Fantabulous.
Hey, guess what?
What?
I want to read some names off here.
Did they win the lotto?
Kind of.
They won the OTCP lotto.
They did. There are new Patreons, and we love them. We love everyone.
But we do. We love them a little bit more. Just
yeah,
maybe.
Just,
a little bit.
Just because, you know, because. Big shout outs to Andy, Lynn, Carol, Kimmy, Chrissy with a K, which is not really Chrissy.
That's not really Chrissy
with
a K.
It's just a little joke. Melissa, Amy, DJ, Jennifer C, and Ruth Ann.
Yay.
Yay. We love you guys.
10?
Thank you so much. We have 10.
Wow, that's amazing.
I know.
That makes me so happy.
They're the 10 best people in the entire world.
They really are.
They really are.
Right after they come just ahead of everybody else.
I know. Just a little bit. I also want to do a big shout out to Kisha. And I hope that's how you say your name. Right before we started recording, we got a little tweet that said that hearing us during her workday makes her workday a little bit better. So that was a great compliment. Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank
very much,
you.
Kisha. I hope that's how you pronounce your name. If not, you can yell at me over Twitter.
That's okay. Yeah, I'll do it for you.
Yeah.
Just hit me up and I'll yell at her.
That's okay. We spent the first 15 minutes deciding how to spell your name.
We're like,
is it Kesha? Like the singer?
Kisha?
Kisha? Yeah. We don't know. We can barely pronounce our own names. Anything new, Cam?
Yes, there is something new. I bought the Ninja Foodie, and
oh,
I'm obsessed
yeah.
with it right now. It's sort of like...
Have you made anything with
yes,
it
yet? Yes, I did. I made two things yesterday, and today I'm making some other stuff. It's kind of fun.
And what'd you make?
I made French fries. Mm-hmm. So they're air...
Air fried?
Air crisp, or whatever they call it. That was pretty cool. And the kids liked them, so... And then I made a chicken, rice, and broccoli last night. Chicken really good, broccoli really good. Rice, I didn't make it right, so that's fine. Okay, Ninja Foodie, you can send your check to Cam, C, care of. Just kidding. Hey, this can be our commercial for them. Jen, have you tried the new Ninja Foodie?
Why no, Cam? Can you tell me a little bit about it?
It's completely nonstick. It comes with its own utensils. It's got the fryer pan and rack.
Wow.
Who doesn't like dried out bananas and beef jerky? Yum.
Call now. Ron Popeil.
Quick, you will get the Ginsu knife. It dices, it slices, it compromises. I just added that.
Right? All right, so do you have a good story for us or a case? Or what are we supposed to call these cases, stories?
I'm still worried about seasons. Like, people have seasons. I don't get it.
I don't
like
get
this was a podcast that said we're wrapping up our third season. And I'm like, well, is there a starting point? Is there an ending point? Do you take 3 months off? We don't.
Some just take 2 weeks off. But,
yeah, but then
know.
Do you start a new season?
If I would take 2 weeks off, I'd never get back up to go.
Yeah. So anyway, I just want to welcome our listeners to the Our True Crime Podcast Season 51. Since we just wrapped up our Summer Blast series and
yay,
I was
blast.
Cruising through looking for vacation nightmare stories and things like that,
vacation all I ever wanted.
I came upon this case and I knew the case, but when I went in the back door, wink, wink.
Wink, wink.
And so I didn't.
All the favorite friends come in the back door.
Anyway, I had to like read it for a while and then I'm like, oh, yes. And most people be familiar with this, but I was unaware of some of these details, I do believe.
Cool.
Okay. Ready?
I'm ready.
And I voice texted this, so Lord only knows the mistakes will be in there. So located about 90 miles north of Little Rock, Arkansas, is a little area called the Illinois Bayou. This threw me for a loop. I was trying to find a good vacation nightmare story. And I was like, Illinois Bayou, what's that? So you click on stuff and you just keep clicking and then it takes you places, you know?
Digs you in that hole.
Located in the Ozark Mountains, it has everything that you would think a small bayou would have. bogs and marshes with a very prehistoric kind of feel. The locals, as well as the visitors, flock to this area to hit the water and see what kind of goodies they can catch. If you're a big fisherman, I love to fish. I would like that just to see it too. But sometimes the things that you catch on the other end of the line is something that no one would expect.
No, I know. No.
Those deep, soggy marshes are the perfect place to hide something that you would never want to be found. Nearby is a small town named Tilly. Tilly, Arkansas is located about 50 miles away from the Illinois Bayou. Now, it only has a population of around 100 people, so obviously it has that small town feel and another small town in the Midwest.
Well, at 100 people, I would say it's more than a small town.
With such a small town, there's no need to call 911. There's an emergency. Everybody knows everybody, and all you need to do is swing by and talk to the police officers at the station. Earlene Peterson did just that on an afternoon in January 1996 when she needed to report that her daughter and granddaughter were missing, as well as her daughter's husband. Nancy Mueller, age 28, and her daughter, Sarah, age 8, along with Nancy's husband, Bill Mueller, were nowhere to be found. Now, the couple are extremely conservative, which happens a lot in the Midwest with the Bible Belt. So Nancy is a stay-at-home mom who homeschools her young daughter, Sarah. Nancy's husband, Bill, who's 52 years old, works as an electrician at the local Walmart. Bill is also an active member of a gun rights organization called the Patriot Movement. Bill, even though he's an electrician by day, has a little side business at night, well, or on the side, I guess, and he operates a gun business where he'll sell and trade guns, and he travels around and goes to gun shows doing this. Mm-hmm. Now, Earlene, Nancy's mom, said that she had not heard from the couple in over a week, that the couple had left to go to a gun show in Oklahoma. Due to the ages of the couple and the fact that their daughter was with them, police felt that there was no immediate need to investigate and there wasn't much to go on, figuring maybe, you know, took a little side trip, little vacation, whatever. Earlene was not happy with this, so she decides to call Nancy's brother, David, go get him. They're going to drive 20 miles to the Mueller's house, to their home. When they get there, they immediately notice something's off. They arrive, and the front door is wide open. The house is clean, with no disturbances immediately inside.
Well, I don't live there, that's for sure.
At first, everything seems normal, minus the open door. And then Earlene finds something. She finds luggage that was half-packed. Now, it had Nancy's clothes in it and Sarah's toys. If Nancy and Sarah were going to accompany Bill on the trip to the gun show, why would they leave their half packed bags there?
Right.
Earlene now feels that she has concrete evidence, and she returns to the police department to report what she had found at the house. The officer suggests to Earlene that maybe the family, you know, went off the grid. Bill, as I stated earlier, is a pretty strict conservative, and he has some rather radical views. In fact, Bill was pretty possessive over his family and controlling over Nancy and what she did. When the sheriff's investigator, whose name is Aaron Duvall, hears about all of this, he's not really surprised. He knows the Mueller family because Bill Mueller used to work as a constable for the sheriff's department. He knows about Bill's stringent beliefs and guns and freedom. Take my gun, take my free. You know, he's a very conservative gun owner. Bill Mueller was very anti-government, and he did not believe in paper money. He wanted everything exchanged in metals, such as gold and silver. Days turn into weeks, and Earlene is still desperately trying to find her daughter, Nancy. Nothing seems to be happening in the case. That is until the sheriff gets a call from a man who lives about 50 miles away from the Mueller's home. The man states that he was patrolling his property, just taking a look around, and he stumbled upon a Jeep and a trailer. And he noticed it had been sitting there for at least a couple days due to the dust on it and things like that. It wasn't freshly driven in there. The sheriff runs the tags and the license plate number, and it reveals that the Jeep and trailer belong to Bill Mueller. So fear begins to creep in, and the sheriff, as well as Arlene, start to wonder what they're going to find in that trailer. They're desperately hoping it will not be the family of three in the back of the trailer. The trailer was like a big...
Not, like a camper?
No, more like a, you know, it's a pull-along, but it's not big enough to like move... You sort of like the little U-Hauls that you pull behind, the little ones, right? But so he would put all his guns and stuff in there and the luggage.
It's like little travel
trailer. Yeah.
At first, I thought you were saying it was like a camper. That's what I was.
No, trailer.
Or an actual trailer. Yeah.
So the Jeep and the trailer, which, as I stated, would hold the guns, had been ditched in a swampy area about 45 minutes from the Mueller home. It was obvious that the vehicle and the trailer had been purposely dumped and hidden. They were in sort of a hard-to-see spot, hence why the man patrolling his property, it took him estimated days to find. Authorities had asked David, who was Nancy's brother, to accompany them. They needed somebody to identify the body, should there be any. Officers break the lock open on the trailer, and David is waiting to see if the trailer held the bodies of his sister and young niece. How horrific would that be, sitting there waiting, and you're waiting for the doors to open to see if those are your loved ones? Relief sweeps over all of them, as there's no bodies in the trailer, but all the guns were missing. The disappearance continued to get stranger as the officers opened up the vehicle to see what they could find inside. Inside, they locate a purse belonging to Nancy Mueller, along with her ID and all its contents. Now, we as ladies know, you're not going to leave your purse in there.
That's a good sign.
Did Bill Mueller take his wife and young child and really go off the grid? That's what the authorities are starting to think at this time, seeming possibly more and more likely. You don't need an ID or a purse or anything like that if you're going to be living in the middle of nowhere. Nancy had met Bill 3 years prior when she went to work for him as a junior electrician. He was 20 years older than her, and her parents were not very happy about this dating situation. They married only a year after having met. At first, Bill was a good husband to Nancy. He was a doting stepfather. But about 2 years into the marriage, something started to change. Bill had changed. He became even more controlling and slightly violent. After one big fight, Nancy threatened to leave him and take Sarah. Sarah was his stepdaughter from a previous relationship. In a fit of rage, Bill shot the TV up and tossed it outside. To me, that would be horrible because you know I love me some TV. Nancy had called her mother, Arlene, to come get her and young Sarah. But Bill said that they couldn't leave. He just couldn't live without her. He needed her. She couldn't leave him, etc., etc.
Well, that's what happened.
Bill won and Nancy stayed. As no word from the family comes in, authorities are starting to believe that, in fact, Nancy and Bill did go off the grid. All of that changes on June 28th, 1996. So there's this young couple, and they decide to go enjoy the day. They're going to go fishing. They like to do that together. Enjoy the day out on the water, see if they can catch some large catfish in the swampy area. So the woman that's with the gentleman decides to toss out her line first. He's still putting a bait on the hook.
Don't they all?
She immediately gets a hit. And, you know, he's like, are you kidding me? That's not fair.
Fish are biting.
As she's trying to reel it in, she realizes it's very difficult. It must be stuck on something. It's snagging. It's not coming. So she starts to realize that, you know what? I think this isn't a fish. Like, there's something else here. And then it kind of lets go. So in she reels it in. And it comes up. And it's a shoe with a leg in it attached.
Dinner is served.
Oof. Investigators race to the scene and scuba divers hit the water. The murky water is so dark and dingy that they can't even see anything.
I mean, the Mississippi River is just disgusting. I couldn't imagine a swamp.
It was so tough to do the search. It actually took over 2 days for the investigators to complete the search. They knew what they were going to find would be horrific, but nothing could prepare them for when they found the body of a young girl who was wearing a t-shirt with little kittens on the front.
Aww.
How sad is that? That made me like so sad. At the conclusion of the search, investigators located 3 bodies, the body of the young girl, a body of a man, and the partial remains of a female. The leg that was pulled out of the water by the fisher person was the woman. All 3 of the bodies had plastic wrapping around their heads, which indicated that they had been suffocated. They were weighted down with rocks that were taped to their body with duct tape. The scene was gruesome and deliberate. Due to the amount of time that had went by, the bodies were very decomposed. They believed the bodies to have been in the water at least 5 months. Authorities realized that the Mueller family did not go off the grid and that all 3 had been victims of a brutal crime. Authorities are now left wondering who would want these 3 people dead.
Poor Arlene. Not only did she lose her daughter, but her granddaughter. How horrible.
Police hit the community hard. knocking on doors, trying to figure out what happened. A tip comes in from one of those houses in which they visited. A man tells authorities that he had heard recently that the Mueller's had come into some money. It was approximately $50,000 in coins. Since Bill was distrusting of the bank institution and all the people around there knew it, they knew that those coins had to be in his house. Police are now wondering, did somebody kill them to get that money? The police call in the ATF to see if they can track where those guns have disappeared to after they were stolen from the trailer. At first, they're unable to find anything. Investigators, since they couldn't track any of the stolen weapons, decide they're going to go back to the Mueller home. They want to take another look around, see if they've missed anything, see if they can uncover anything that maybe somebody missed. A shock hits them as they arrive to an empty house. The landlord tells him that he had to get ready for the new tenants and that everything that they had had, that he had left behind, well, he just put them in some boxes and put them to the side.
Oh, well, at least he did that.
And got rid of everything else.
Oh.
Inside one of the boxes, officers find an empty gun case. It is the case for a revolver, but there's no revolver inside. In Arkansas, which I did not know this, revolvers are not required to be registered in the state. Mm-hmm. The gun was not among one of the stolen guns. It was not with those stolen guns at that time. ATF agent decides to take the serial number from the box and enter it into the National Crime Information Center. Bam, they get a hit. The Seattle Police Department had pulled over a man recently named Travis Brake, and in his possession was a gun. That gun is now sitting in the evidence room in Seattle. Travis Brake had been arrested 4 months ago for carrying a concealed weapon without a permit. The gun was taken from him. Now agents need to talk to Mr. Travis Brake and see where, in fact, he got that gun. Travis Brake comes to the police station and has a little sit-down interview with the officers. Brake informs them that he had purchased the gun recently from a gun show in Seattle. He didn't know who had owned it previously. Police want to know if he knows the name of the person he purchased the gun from. Can you at least, you know, tell us what they look like? Brake tells them he doesn't know the name of the man, but he does tell them he knows that he's not from around here, not from Seattle, because he kind of looked like a hillbilly with overalls and a long beard. Police believe Travis Brake, so they decide to show him some photos that they had found at the Mueller's residence. Now, they're photos that were taken with Bill.
Family photos.
At various gun shows with other gun lovers and gun owners and things like that.
Okay, no. Just business photos then.
Correct. Travis Brake notices in one photo there is a man with Bill Mueller, and he points that man out. He says, that's him. That's who I bought the gun from. Now police have a face, but no name. They take the photo back to the Mueller's house, and they visit with the landlord, and they show it to him, asking if he might, perchance, know who this is. The landlord says, well, yeah, I recognize that man. That's Kirby Kehoe.
Not Kirby Kehoe.
It is Kirby Kehoe. Now you should know our story. Do you want to know our story?
A little bit.
Okay. Kirby Kehoe and his wife, Gloria, used to live about 40 miles from the Mueller family. Kirby, who had 8 sons, was an angry former vet and didn't have much money. The Kehoes and the Muellers had become acquainted through gun shows. The families had actually gotten quite close. Gloria would even babysit young Sarah if the Muellers had to work a gun show for an afternoon. So it's very possible that the Kehoes would know about Bill Mueller and what he had in his possession, which was the $50,000 worth of coin. There's another reason that's glaringly obvious why the Kehoes might be somehow involved. The families are members of an organization called the Christian Identity, which is an extremist, racist, anti-government religious group. We all know that these extreme right groups favor heavy artillery, and police are now left wondering if this friend of Bill's had in fact killed them for their guns. First, they're kind of thinking it's money. Now they're leaning more towards the guns that were missing from the trailer. Oldest son, Chevy Kehoe, used to be an honor student. He was very bright. Fellow students seemed to like him. He was sort of a leader, nice personality. But then in 1988, his parents decided to pull him and his younger brother, Shane, also spelled with a C-H, out of public school and homeschool them. Ironically, future serial killer Israel Keyes was a close family friend.
Oh, good.
Police are busy trying to tighten up the investigation. They're not yet ready to make a move on Kehoe or let him know that he was a possible suspect. And that could be Kehoe the dad as well as Kehoe the brother.
Right.
But they don't know that yet. That all changes in December 1996 when an officer pulls over a truck 600 miles north at a rest stop in North Dakota. The officer notices the illegally parked SUV has white power stickers on the back window, which is fine. You're not profiling them to pull them over for that.
And white power, as in supremacy, not in
correct
any kind of electrical power.
The driver turned out to be Sean Haynes, a neo-Nazi who admitted there were guns in the back of the vehicle. When he was asked, are you carrying anything you shouldn't be? One of the guns was a .223 semi-automatic rifle. The officer runs the serial number on the gun, and it comes back with a hit. It was one of Bill Mueller's missing guns. Authorities then pull in Sean Haynes, and they start to question him. At first, he's not giving anything up. He's not telling them anything. He doesn't want to incriminate himself. Then the police tell him he will be charged with the murder of three people if he does not fess up. He then informs them that he traded that gun that was in his possession for another gun. And that person he traded that gun with was Chevy Kehoe, son of Kirby Kehoe. When the police try to go and locate Chevy Kehoe and his father, it seems that the whole Kehoe clan have blown town. They can't be found. They're gone. One cold day in February 1997, something happens. Ohio State Trooper Harold Harker pulls over a blue Suburban for expired tags. The driver of the vehicle informed him that he does not have any identification. The officer then asked the driver to step out and come back to the police cruiser with him. The events that unfold after that can be seen on a dash cam video, and it's pretty much made its way all around. So even if you're not familiar with the case, you've probably seen the video. We'll post it on our blog. What unfolds in the video is this. The driver attempts to run back and get into the driver's seat. At that point, another officer jumps out of the patrol car. As he's screaming, a passenger jumps out from the passenger side. He takes a stance and he starts firing a gun. He starts firing at the officers. The gunman then runs into some nearby woods as the other officer is trying to keep the truck from taking off, but fails and the car races away. Remarkably, nobody gets hurt. The shootout hits the evening news and the manhunt goes nationwide. The driver of the vehicle is identified as 24-year-old Chevy Kehoe, and in the passenger seat is his 20-year-old brother Shane Kehoe. The video is pretty dramatic if you've never seen it, and I cannot believe nobody got injured, but they really didn't.
It's amazing.
24 hours later, authorities find an abandoned blue Suburban that had been driven by the Kehoe brothers, but the Kehoe brothers obviously are nowhere to be found. Police search the inside of the Suburban, and they locate a lot of ammunition, some guns, and some fake FBI gear. Now, that's one thing that immediately catches one of the officer's eye. As a police constable, if you remember, Bill Mueller had a particular badge that he would wear. And inside that Suburban was that badge. The Mueller's murders are now connected to the Kehoes. The FBI announces a $60,000 reward to the public in connection for information to the Kehoe brothers. Tips start pouring in. There's reported sightings of the boys in various southern states, but authorities can't seem to close in on them. They're always just a step ahead. 4 months pass. It's now June 1997, a full year after the recovery of the Mueller's bodies. A young man walks into the police station in Colville, Washington. This man is none other than Shane Kehoe. Officers proceed to question Shane Kehoe, and he has informed them that he is scared, not of the police, but of his brother. He tells officers that he believes his brother, Chevy, has gone crazy, and he's capable of anything at this minute. In fact, Shane is worried that Chevy is going to kill him, his wife, and his young children, meaning Shane's children and wife. He tells officers he'd rather risk going to prison than to be killed by his own brother. Shane then goes on to inform police that part of Chevy's plan involves killing both his parents and taking all the younger boys and raising them as part of a new nation, the new nation he wanted to create. This would be an all-white, anti-government nation. Oh, and to top it off, Chevy had decided that he wanted Shane's wife for himself.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. That was the final straw for Shane, and Shane couldn't take it anymore.
Well, how did Shane's wife take it? Did Shane's wife have to say?
No, but you got to remember, these guys kind of believed in polygamy, number one. Mm-hmm. And number two, they wanted to create their own nation and government. So mm-hmm. it would be sort of like a, you know, you don't get a say. Police want to know if Shane had anything to do with the murders of the Mueller family. He denies it. He even says, "I'll give you my brother's location as proof that I had nothing to do with those murders." He then tells officers that his brother is living on a ranch in, you ready for this? Mm-hmm. Gun Lock. Swear to God, Gun Lock, Utah, with his wife, meaning his own wife,
right,
and their kids. The rancher on site had allowed Chevy Kehoe, as well as his brother and their families, to stay there because he had no idea of who they were or had what they had done. The Pope County Sheriff's Department immediately notifies the farmer about the dangerous man living on his land. The farmer agrees to fully cooperate with authorities, and they come up with a plan. On June 17th, 1997, the farmer tells Chevy Kehoe that he needs him to do him a favor. He needs him to drive him into town where he can get some feed for the farm. As Chevy pulls up to the store, authorities are there, rush the vehicle and arrest him without incident, and place him in the police car. Now, with both brothers in custody, police still have some unanswered questions that they need answered. With the three bodies that were duct taped and suffocated and tossed into the swampy land, they believe that more than one person was responsible. How could one person take down three? I mean, one was a little girl, but still. So who's the other person? Shane tells investigators he was not involved, but he does know who was involved. His name is Danny Lee Graham. Danny Lee Graham was nothing more than a low-level street thug. He was a follower, a neo-Nazi skinhead, simply stated, a guy that Chevy Kehoe could ultimately control and manipulate. And boy, was he a looker. And that's just my own opinion. And by looker, I mean, not only is he difficult to look at, but he has difficulty looking because he only has one eye. Chevy Kehoe is now in custody, and he is maintaining his innocence and that he had absolutely nothing to do with the murders of the Mueller family. Authorities know that they need something extra, so they decide to reach out to Gloria Kehoe, which is Chevy's mom, Kirby's husband, Kirby's wife, and see if she can provide any details. Gloria Kehoe tells authorities that Chevy and Daniel went into the house looking for that money, the gold and silver, and the coins that the family had recently acquired. Chevy and Danny dressed up like FBI agents, as they knew that Bill had lots of guns, and if the two young men just came up to the house, they would risk being shot. As Bill opened the door, it was Danny who he would see first. Chevy was slumped over behind him. Now, he was kind of hiding because he knew Bill would recognize him, because Bill had been to a gun show with Kirby Kehoe and Chevy, and they had met earlier. Chevy knew that Bill might recognize him, so he was trying to kind of hide. The FBI men demand the gold and the guns. Chevy managed to separate Bill from Sarah and Nancy and tie Bill up while Danny was with Nancy and Sarah. At this time, Bill had recognized Chevy and knew that he knew him. Panicked, Chevy knew that things would have to change from their original plan. They promised Bill that they would not hurt his family if he would just surrender the guns and gold. But Bill started struggling to get free as he heard his wife and stepdaughter begging for their lives in the next room. Gloria Kehoe says that Chevy told her that they panicked, and after they killed the three by suffocating them with plastic bags over their head, they duct taped the bags around their head. They then loaded all three bodies into the back of the pickup and drove them 50 miles until they reached the Illinois Bayou. They then duct taped 50-pound rocks to their torsos. Jeez. And in their clothes that they had on. Obviously, they did not want them to be found. They didn't know what to do with the bodies, so they simply dumped them in the swamp, thinking that no one would ever find them. This was not the first encounter with the family. In February 1995, Chevy Kehoe, along with his father, had robbed the Tilly, Arkansas home of William Frederick Mueller, who was a gun dealer and had a large collection of weapons, ammunition, and cash. In June 1995, Kehoe and an accomplice kidnapped and robbed Malcolm and Jill Friedman, a couple believed to be Jewish who owned a store at which Kehoe was once employed. If the Muellers gave up the gold, it was never located. In March 1999, Chevy Kehoe is found guilty and receives a sentence of three life terms without the possibility of parole. Because he had had a prior extensive criminal background, Chevy's accomplice, Daniel Lee, receives the death penalty. So I knew that the story from that videotape, the dash cam, because right. I remember that coming on the news, and I remember thinking, wow, they're so young, and what did they do? But I didn't remember that it went with all that, that poor family and that poor little 8-year-old girl and stuff. Anyway, that was the case.
That was, I do remember that. I do remember
video.
Dash cam video, but I wasn't really for sure on all the information and the parts. Unreal.
This makes me think about Levi King, who was one in our previous episode, please check it out, who also had a very controlling, if not abusive, father. So Kirby Kehoe was very controlling over those boys. He pushed their beliefs on them, right? Shane was okay, intelligence and everything. Sorry, Shane, if you're listening. But Chevy was...
Shane.
But Chevy was actually... He was pretty a bright kid, you know, and they like an honor roll kid.
Right.
And it just takes me back to where... what the parents do that affects a child to make them do that.
Or if they're already born that way.
Well, I just think it goes...
Because the other kids didn't.
That's my own point.
I know. It's hard.
And a postscript to this is that they were arrested, I think it was 2013, I want to say. Shane, or Chain, as you like to call him, was arrested again with his father for gun issues and things like that. Yeah, right? Still believing that. White is right.
I don't understand that hatred for... I mean, I understand hating people for something
bad
they've
shoes.
Done or...
Bad
for,
outfit choices.
Yeah, but just because of their religious belief or color of their skin just is beyond me. I don't get it. For me to hate you, you've got to do something to me or something that I perceive you are doing to me.
Perceive is the key word.
Perceive is the key. Because I'll make you a list of the people that I don't like, and I'll tell you what I think they did to me. Very interesting, that whole subculture.
I know, I'm really into the psychological, you know, our good friend, criminal perspective on Patreon.
Christopher Druitt.
But I was doing the podcast. Mm-hmm. Point being is that I started being a Patreon for them because I listened to a little clip, and it, the psychological aspect of how these people do it and all that stuff. That's the same thing. Like this boy was 24 years old, and he the other one was 20.
And he did it without his father's.
No, they're just greedy. They wanted money. They wanted, you know.
Well, it's the root of all evil.
All right, that's all I got.
That was good.
You want to tell good people where they can find us?
You can find us at Twitter, Our True Crime Pod. Cam even has one if you'd like to chat with her. She is at OTCP with Cam. You can find us on our website at www.ourtruecrimepodcast.com.
Did you forget the name?
I did. Let's see. You can Gmail us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. We do have a Patreon we are trying to build. If you would, we've noticed that it's kind of hard to find us on Patreon. So it is Patreon, patreon.com/ourtruecrimepodcast. If you would like to donate, do not feel the need to, but it would be greatly appreciated. On our website, if you would like to make a one-time donation, there is a little donate button now. You can click that. Once again, no big deal if you don't. We like doing this. But I think that's it, don't you? Did I cover all the bases?
I think so. To those that have donated, thank you so much.
Thank you. We really appreciate it.
Really comes in handy. For instance, we were recording, what day was that? What's today? It was Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle of it, we did one episode. Then we did two. Then we're going to do the third. And the
equipment kind of
went out.
Kerschlop. So we had to get our Amazon Prime going.
Which Amazon Prime?
Yeah, Amazon Prime's the best.
So anyway, so that's where that stuff goes to.
Yeah, so we had to hurry up and get new equipment. Because God only knows, if we wouldn't have problems, we wouldn't have anything at all.
I don't even know what to say. Like, seriously.
I know.
Nobody has this much.
I know. People are followed by lucky stars. We are followed by black clouds.
Always.
But damn it, we're doing it.
Now it's kind of like a...
Now we have to.
Well, now it just makes me mad.
Because
I was like, you stop it. Just not... Quit it. This is not going to happen.
I know. The
podcast we are bigger and better than that stupid mixer or whatever that thing's called.
Interface. I know.
Whatever.
Yeah, I know. It's like we get everything going and then God goes, ha, 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 this is what I'm going to do to you.
I'm going to let you do too.
Yeah, so anyway, big thank you for everybody listening.
Remember, lock your doors.
Keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love you.
I gotta say something. Woo! I think I gotta know ya, know ya. Oh, jungle love. Woo, woo. True.
All righty. Should we get down to...
Sorry, I had a bog.
A bog?
A frog.
Oh.
Hi, Reg. What are you doing?
You never said hello.
He's fiddling with me.
So that's what was in your throat.
Woo!
Reg, you want to come up here?
Sorry, Nico. Reggie says hi, though.
Reggie does say hi. Come here. You know who loves you as much as we do? Reggie.
Come here, Reg. I'll
Okay.
That's what she said.
Mine was off.
You know, Missouri's really big for catfish, as is the South. Well, I guess every... I don't know if they are. But anyway, I love catfish. I just had some. Catfish fingers in New Orleans. Oh my God, it was so good. So as she starts to reel it in, she realizes that it's really hard. It's
that's what she said.
Sorry, I'm going to rephrase that. Due to the amount of decomposition. God.
Decomposition.
Oh, shit.
Due to the amount of decomposing.
I know, right?
Yeah.
That's what I... Decomposition.
Yeah.
There we go. Due to the amount of decomposition. I can't say that word now. Oh, my God.
Decomposition.
See?
No,
see? Decom. A man. Stop looking at me. I can see you looking at me at the peripheral of my eye. And
I'm listening to your story.
Make me stress out. I'm a snore.
I'm listening to your story. If I don't look at you, you'll think that I'm not listening.
I need you to look at me, but not look at me. Do you understand? Like, look at me, but don't look at me. Are you looking at me? Don't
favorites.
Look at me. Yes.
Don't look at me. Don't look at me.
Okay, sorry. This is my voice texting Nico. A shark hits them as they arrive to an empty house. I think it's supposed to be a shock. Fort. And try.
Stop laughing at me! Stop it! Oh my God. I'm sorry.
You're petting your dog and taking pictures of your dog.
I posted it that we're recording.
I know, thank God, because you're obviously paying so much attention.
You told me not to look at you.
But he didn't see that coming. Because of his eye, get it? And then I said, I can make fun of people that are that evil because he really was evil.
I mean, I was.
He got a death penalty versus, you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. he was just a piece of trash.
They're all pieces of trash.
Very.
From the white supremacist mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. all of them.
Yep.
Horrible. Just horrible.
Girl, okay, mine broke, so I got the Amazon thing because mm-hmm. Ding Dong had it. Like, my life is not lazy enough. You press the button. Alexa, play Real Detective. I don't even have to press a button or get off my bed.
Nice.
Oh, I'm like, this is just what I need.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty soon, I'm going to, with Walmart delivering food, mm-hmm. me not having to change the channel, if I can get a maid just to bring me stuff and clean my house, I will never have to leave my house ever again.
When you die, we'll have to get the fire department to cut you
have to come in there. Yep.
Get you out.
Hopefully. Fingers crossed, that's how it'll go.